This is Bump and Stacey
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
Here we go now.
One more thing from David Schoenfield, ESPN baseball expert, joined us at 11 a.m. and we asked him all kinds of questions about the Mariners and the Mariners offense and what's going on. And as part of this conversation, Bump and I told him, look, we've been discussing theories all morning. And while this team can be really fun, and while they are winning, and while they are still, with a chance here to once again regain a lead in the AL West with a win, assuming Texas loses, there is some stuff to feel worried about with the offense. 14 strikeouts yesterday in Minnesota. Just 3 hits in Minnesota. This offense has been wildly inconsistent. I believe they're 0-11 when they allow 5 or more runs. So if the pitching isn't on it, the offense can't make up for it. A lot of fans, and I completely understand this, and I am included in this group, have been quick bumped to be like, the park doesn't matter. Stop telling me about the marine layer. Stop giving it's me all real. These excuses. Stop doing this, because fog or being at sea level or dense air does not explain chase rate or a swing and a miss or strikeouts, which is very true. But David Schoenfield left us with one little nugget at the end of the interview. He said, well, just so you know, the Mariners are 11th in road OPS, 695. At home, they're 28th. So maybe there is a park factor at play.
There might be. Numbers say that it's a factor. Is it the biggest factor, I think, is what rubs people the wrong way when they feel like, oh, you're just focusing on the atmosphere, not the players themselves, not their play discipline, what they're swinging at and all that good stuff. And I go, yeah, there are many factors to this. I think so far during, 2 hours of this show, we've talked about the atmosphere, the coaching, play discipline, and guys kind of figuring out. Curses.
We've covered the ground.
The curse and just how pitchers attack this lineup. The further you get into the season, the more teams understand you, the more data there is, the more likely they are to attack your weaknesses. And I think all that is true. But I think just like we can't ignore that, you can't ignore this neither. That doesn't necessarily mean that this is the main factor, but numbers show you that they are better on the road than they are at home. Now, I could say, all right, it's the atmosphere or it's the batter's eye slanted, right? I can point to that as well, the shadows. There are many things. But I think it's important that once something comes up, it's at least talked about and addressed. Because if not, then it allows ourselves and people to kind of focus on one thing and make them believe that that is it. You are who you are because of a million interactions you've had in your life and the people that brought you up, and same thing with me. I can't point to one of my flaws and be like, that's the reason why I messed
exactly
up in that
area.
That's
where it came from.
I know. It's a bunch of things combined into one. So with all the data, baseball is full of data. It's full of data. It'd be dumb to not look at this and have a conversation about
it. That's a really good analogy, because I think there's a lot of frustration when it comes to a Mariners' general lack of spending and the Mariners' general lack of success in the playoffs or visits to the playoffs over the last 20 years. And that has bred, including in me, like resentment, anger, hesitation, a lack of optimism, increasing cynicism. And saying, hey, there's a park factor doesn't bring an excuse to anyone, but it does give you some context for slow starts to the season. It also gives you a bar or something to lean on as the season goes on. For instance, you know what doesn't become as much of a factor in May and in June and in July and August? Cold weather.
Bad atmosphere.
So right now, and this is from Adam Jude, the Seattle Mariners have the 3rd coldest temperatures in the month of April at first pitch in league-wide. That changes in July. That changes in August. If this offense doesn't heat up, literally and figuratively, then what? Then you're having a different
conversation.
Then the conversation becomes, well, let's talk about how you've built this team. Let's talk about, you know what I mean?
Like, well, that's still part of the conversation, too.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, 360, LOL, stop it. Most of the team is hitting 160. That's irresponsible of you to say. It's so irresponsible of you. Collectively, the team is batting 220. Most guys aren't hitting 160. And that comment right there is the reason why you got to have these conversations, because some people throw stuff out there that are merely just based off of how they feel, right? And And if this stat doesn't go off of how you feel, then it becomes combative and people, you don't have to agree to what the reason is, but what you should do is look at all the possibilities and say, all right, well, like you just mentioned, once the weather gets better, let's see what happens here.
Yeah.
All right, let's give it a week and see what the strikeouts look like. Maybe that changes. The data is always changing, so your viewpoints should change on how you look at the data at the same time. It's not just this is what it is and this is what it's going to be. This is just what it is right now. And why is it like that right now?
Yes, exactly. That number, the difference in OPS that David sent us on road versus home, 11th on the road, 28th at home, those aren't made up numbers.
No.
Now, the reason for them is complicated. Like Bump said, there are a lot of reasons for one number. There could be so many factors at play. Maybe for one player, it's purely mental. Maybe for another player, he's getting caught up in a new system. Maybe for another player, the balls he's hitting just aren't going as far and there is some kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Atmosphere kind of stuff at play. So it's not all the same for every player, and it's not all the same for every number, but there is a difference there. This is a team that's better on the road than they are at home. Mm-hmm. However, this is also a team that's not as good on the road as they should be. Like, this is also an offense that even on the road is not lights out, and even on the road still strikes out. They struck out 14 times against Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a team that has some offensive issues to figure out. What we've been trying to do all day and what we'll do during the dugout when Shannon joins us and when we get on some of these baseball experts is figure out, well, what's behind the numbers? Why are you striking out more than any other team in baseball? Is it because you aren't spending enough on players? Well, there are teams that spend less than you that strike out less. Is it because you're playing in a ballpark with that's at sea level? Well, I don't know how much an atmosphere affects strikeouts. Is it the specific players you put together? Well, you brought in Jorge Polanco because you thought he'd get more contact, and same with Garver, and they're not so far. So why? That to me is the fascinating question for today.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's simple. I don't think you can point to it and go, obviously it's this. If it was obvious, the team wouldn't be doing it.
And just the common denominator is just the uniform that these guys are wearing. And that's what makes it so baffling, is because when you put on this other uniform, when you had on this other uniform, you look like a different player. So why, once you put this uniform on and you play here half of the year, do your numbers change? That is the mission here.
Mm-hmm.
And the mission might not ever be accomplished. And if the mission is never accomplished, but these guys get into the playoffs, I don't think we're looking back on May 7th and having these conversations. You know why? Because we're focused on what's happening in that moment. But because you're in this moment and you have a team that has shown that they can compete in this division, yet they aren't producing the way that you expect them to produce, it's natural that people start searching for things and start trying to figure out, all right, what's the issue here? You think this coaching staff ain't trying to figure this out and they're not looking and having these conversations and looking at data trying to figure out? Of course they are. If they had the answers right now, then we wouldn't be having this conversation. But the common denominator is Seattle itself,
mm-hmm.
and the team that they play for and the staff that they inherit or that they're traded into. That's the common denominator. The players still got to go out and execute. Oh, it's deeper than the one stat that we put out about OPS at home in a way, but it's a factor and should be talked
about.
And
they have new hitting coaches. I've seen a couple people say, like, well, fire the hitting coach. This has been a consistent issue. They've moved the coaching staff around. So there are new factors at play that are producing the same results. And you could say, oh, well, it's the philosophy. Like you mentioned earlier in the show, Bump, to open it, there are a lot of teams that have philosophies that are not dissimilar to Seattle's. It's not this like wildly unique philosophy to control the strike zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is not. It's pretty common in baseball.
Pitches.
You know what I mean? Look for your pitch. Look for a four-seamer down the middle. Like, pretty common philosophy in baseball. But there are slight differences, and we'll talk with Shannon about that when she joins us in less than an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about execution, though, because that is a big part of it. And there's only so much I can say about acquisition that hasn't already been said. Like, what am I going to complain about free agency on May 7th? So let's talk about the pieces that you do have. Julio obviously needs to be better. I think Julio can be a superstar. I think he currently is a star. I worry after what David told us about, like, some players just chase.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't change. And I'm a little worried after that.
Yeah, yeah, that's something to talk about. And I don't hear a lot of what we're getting is stop making excuses. That's not an excuse. I think Julio might be a chaser. and just like David said, it could be fixed, it could not be fixed. That's inherently, it's in him. It's who he is as a person, as a ball player. Just like we talked about the scenario of Alonzo, being traded. You know what you're going to get out of him. He swings hard and he hits bombs. That's who he is. You're going to get strikeouts with him. We're looking at Polanco and saying, well, this is what you thought you were getting, but it's not working out the way, even though he's on an eight-game hitting streak right now. Mm-hmm. Eight-game hitting streak. But as far as production-wise, that's not what we're getting. It's not an excuse. It's, okay, what's going on? And what could be the factors to this whole thing? And I think that internally, there's something going on as far as the messaging, possibly. And there's something going on with the execution. There's something going on with them playing here as opposed to playing on the road and producing. All those things make a, what are they, 19 and, what are they, what's the record right now?
19 and something.
19 and something team right now.
Whatever the difference is, 19 and 16.
Second in the division. All of that makes this team. So it's not necessarily excuses. Excuses would be if I went out there and be like, leave Julio alone, he's just young. No, I'm saying Julio typically struggles in the beginning of the season, going off of what he's done. He gets hot as the season gets hotter or the weather gets hotter, and he can produce. It's not, leave Castillo alone. No, Castillo, I'm looking at his numbers. I go, well, he typically starts off slow, mm-hmm. so let me wait. There are checkpoints. I've used this analogy before. There are checkpoints that you go through a season as a team and as a player to where you go off of history. History says this is going to happen. You know what history says? When I get home from work, I kiss my wife, I kiss my babies, and then I go use the restroom. You can bank on that. It's going to happen. History says.
In order.
That's what's going to happen.
Most of the time.
And that's all it is that you have to go off of what they typically do, and if they're not doing it, try to figure out why it's not happening now. So, yeah, common denominator, though, Mariners, ballpark, hit the ball, Dave.
I will say this is why we're talking about it so much. I don't think the Mariners need the best offense in baseball to be a World Series winner. I don't think they need a top five offense to be a World Series winner. And that is why this matters so much as a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I think if Julio can play up to his baseball card, I know that that's an annoying saying that we use all the time. If Polanco can cut down those strikeouts, if Garver can cut down those strikeouts, if you get JP back and healthy, if Ty and a couple other guys can just sharpen the defensive plays just a little bit, this is a team that can easily go to the ALCS.
Mm-hmm.
With the way this pitching staff is working right now, what I worry is that you will not have the offense to sustain success if the pitching has a little bit of a tumble or step back.
Yeah. Yep.
But that's why it's being able to taste something, you know, knowing that your pitching has been so good, so thoroughly developed, that you don't even need to be elite.
You don't. You just be average.
You could be middle of the road. Mm-hmm. You could be 15th in average, and I guarantee you they'd have like three more wins right now.
Yep. There's always a strength and a weakness of a team. We know what the strength of this team. We know what the weakness is. We're just trying to figure out ways or why the weakness isn't average and if there's a path for them to be average. And if they can do that, this team has a shot. They still got a shot now. They're, half a game behind the Rangers right now.
All right, we're going to take a look around the NFL. Get your question sent in for What I Need to Know, 866-979-3776. And then at 1 p.m., we're heading to the huddle. It's still Bump and I. We're not going anywhere. Curtis and Matt are here, too. The dugout. I know, Curtis, I saw him leaning over about to correct me. I will do this every time. The dugout. all Mariners from 1 to 2. We're going to take a look around the world of baseball to see the biggest stories. We're going to talk to some experts like Shannon Dreher and Dave Sims. And then Mariners pitching strategist Trent Blank is going to join us at 1:45. All of that is still to come right now. Let's head to the station for Hype Train. One day I'll get it right. huddle, dugout, huddle, dugout.
You're like,
they're two abstract words.
You're still batting like 900.
And
though.
They're similar. They're similar words, but different. You guys get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
You
see what I'm
saying?
Yeah. Are you picking up what I'm putting down? I don't know how else to describe them.
I mean, it's only the third season we've done this.
First train into the station. Controversial. Austin Rivers said on the Pat McAfee show, he can take 30 players from the NBA and throw them into the NFL. They do just fine. But you can't do the same taking 30 players from the NFL and putting them in the NBA.
Stupid.
Are you buying what Austin's selling? That's your first hype train.
Austin, you went to Duke. This is the dumbest take I've ever heard out of a Dukie. Actually, nah, JJ got some fire takes, so not dumb. JJ's fire. But listen, man, look, how many basketball players on the offseason go 11-on-11 and go play football? I'm going to go out there and say none, Stacey. They don't go out, They don't put on their cleats, get 22 guys and say, hey, y'all trying to run?
22 guys.
What are you talking about? You know what football players do? They strap them up. They go to Bally's. They go to LA Fitness. And they hoop. Like, what are you talking about? And there's one thing a football player will always be able to do on a basketball court is play defense. Always play defense. The jumper could be off. The handles could be off. You can rebound, play defense, fast breaks. There's no, I'm not saying there's none, but there are hardly any NBA players that can run a route and snap it off, go up and get it, and feel the safety getting downhill about to smack you and come down with the football. That is the dumbest thing I've heard. Big ups to basketball players. It's an extremely skilled sport. No disrespect to that. But football players actually hoop during the offseason. I saw a video of CJ Stroud crossing somebody, step back, lighting them up. Show me a football player that runs a legit route. A legit route. Even LeBron, I've seen him run. I've seen KD run. Those ain't legit routes. They just long. Dumb. So I guess I'm not on that hype train.
Not on the hype train at all. Curtis, are you boarding this hype train? Austin Rivers basically implied that NBA players are more versatile, more athletic, could go to the NFL and succeed, and NFL players can't do the same.
It's an interesting take for sure. I don't think it's 30 that could go from the NBA to the NFL. I think maybe 9 or 10 could maybe make that leap, but to say that 30 guys, basically two full teams worth of guys, being like, yeah, we could go take over the NFL, that seems pretty
ludicrous. LeBron can't be a tight end. He's too soft.
That is a fair point that Austin is not considering.
What is he talking about?
Which is like, even if you have the size, even if like there aren't, as a texter says, there aren't a lot of 7 foot tall NFL players. True, but are there a lot of NBA players who can take a hit?
Joker's getting put on his butt. Put the Joker out there. I'll take a strong safety. They'll light his you-know-what up.
I will say you do see more guys go from playing college basketball to football than you do see guys who don't have any basketball background going from football to basketball. Like Jimmy Graham, George Fant, Antonio Gates. Mm. They've all made the leap to the NFL. Whereas like the only football player I can think of that tried to play professional basketball was Terrell Owens. I think he played in the CBA for a year back when that was a thing. So you don't see too many guys go from NFL to basketball. You do see it the other way around.
Hey, when Master P can play preseason NBA basketball, Master P, the rapper, can go out there and play. I'm saying no disrespect to NBA players. That just lets you know more people do that than actually line up and play. Master P ain't touching a varsity high school football field at 20-something years old. It's crazy.
What was his kid's name?
Lil Romeo played at USC.
Yeah.
What?
He
was friends with DeMar DeRozan.
That's exactly what it is.
They got like both of them there.
I'll say this.
Get aside my buddy.
The flopping that you would see in the NFL.
My God.
All time great performances. Next up. Stick with the NBA for this one. It was actually one of our headline rewrites. T-Wolves looking solid against the Nuggets so far. Defending champs blew them out the other day. T-Wolves will win the series.
Oh, yeah. It's a wrap. It is a wrap. You went to Denver. You went to their kitchen. You made a sandwich. You drank all the Kool-Aid. And you talked crap to them. It's a wrap. Ant-Man will be the face of the NBA in a couple years.
Curtis, the hype train is that the T-Wolves will win the series against the Nuggets. Bump is boarding. Are you?
Yeah, I'm boarding as well.
That's crazy.
They've already stolen home court advantage, and they get their defensive anchor back, probably for game 3. Denver is on the ropes right now. I mean, they had Denver down so bad last night. Jamal Murray's throwing heating packs under the court. That's when you know nothing is going your way. Yeah, this T-Wolves team means business right now, and they look like they're on a mission.
Next up, so this is from an interview with Adam Sheehan on Mad Dog Sports Radio, president of the Cowboys. No, it is not Jerry Jones. It's Stephen Jones of the Jones family. He talked about Dak Prescott. There's all kinds of questions around Dak's future in Dallas and obviously some pressure surrounding both Dak and Mike McCarthy on a team that's gotten 12 wins over the past 3 years and no Super Bowls to show for it. Thankfully, though, Stephen Jones isn't worried. He says, absolutely, I totally think Dak can lead us to a championship. He thinks Dak is the right guy to take them to a Super Bowl. Do you? That's your hype train.
No. Not happening. Simple. That's all I got. That's it. He ain't it. He's not it. He's a really good quarterback. I think they've won, what, three 12-win seasons, I believe. But at some point, man, come on now.
So a follow-up, and then Curtis, consider this for yours. Is it because you think the Cowboys just aren't going to make it to a Super Bowl? There's too much going on? Or that Dak, as a quarterback, as who he brings, as who he is, just doesn't have that ceiling to him? Because he has amazing pieces around him. This is a talented team.
Yeah, and for some reason, Dak gets into the playoffs and doesn't look like the Dak of the regular season. And I think it's a combination of everything, but who he is as a football player has something to do with that.
Curtis, Bump is not boarding the train that Dak can or will take the Cowboys to a Super Bowl, even though Stephen Jones, president of the Cowboys, thinks he can. Are you boarding?
I am not boarding, and it's definitely due to Dak, but I mean, the Jones family, they just meddle too much. They don't let their football people do the football things. Like, it's just a bad combination in Dallas that produces a lot of regular season success for sure, but just can never get over the hump, and I think they just can't get out of their own way.
It is wild. It's so weird. They have so much talent defensively. Like, when you've looked at interception leaders over the last couple of years, if you've looked at not sack leaders, because it would be Garrett and Watt would be dominating that, but I mean, obviously Micah Parsons has been in that conversation. CeeDee Lamb, amazing seasons. Consistently one of the better offensive lines in football. Like, it doesn't make sense.
No.
It doesn't make sense. All right. Get your questions in for What I Need to Know. It's coming up at 45 after, 866-979-3776. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Taking a look around the NFL, we are going to start with a column about some drafted rookies. We don't have much longer to talk about these guys before we're just talking about their teams. Did Michael Penix Jr. land in the best quarterback situation of all first-round rookie passers? Bump, that is what Charles Robinson argues in his latest column for Yahoo Sports. Now, I thought it would be Caleb Williams. Look at all those pass-catching options he has with Chicago. They have a ton of weapons for him. He's obviously a great passer, but Charles Robinson looked at another prime example and his prime theory on why some young quarterbacks fail in order to make his case. He said NFL teams break talented quarterbacks. They systematically destroy them, and rarely do we ever place the appropriate amount of blame where it belongs. He looks at the Jets. He talked to an official with the Jets and says, Zach Wilson shouldn't have started as a rookie. And a Jets official told him that. And he says that's probably the case for a lot of rookies. And that's why Michael Penix Jr., who gets to sit for at least a year behind Kirk Cousins, to him landed in the best spot.
Stacy, if you ever find yourself in a black church and there's a lady sitting behind
you. How do
you
know I don't regularly attend one? Maybe
you do. And there's a lady sitting behind you. She's going, And she is that means she is vibing with what the preacher is saying. That's me right now. Because you know. I am team, let him marinate. Let him sit. The NFL, man, now I think Caleb has an opportunity. He can go out there. He's got weapons, and he's going to get plenty of opportunities. They're not going to give up on him fairly quickly. But I'm all about letting him marinate. That's why I look at Michael Penix in Atlanta, and I look at J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota, and I go, you guys are in a good situation right there. Let him marinate.
I can't believe you think I don't go to a black church.
I said if you just happen, maybe it's been a while. Maybe it's been a while. I don't know.
Joe Burrow's return to practice with the Bengals nearly 6 months after suffering a torn wrist ligament that ended his season in November of last season. Now, we all know Joe Burrow can be great. We all know the weapon he still has there with Ja'Marr Chase. But, Bump, the Ravens are probably favored to be the best team in the NFL. And I know they didn't win a Super Bowl, but they were the best team in the NFL last year. You think it's the Ravens' division to lose?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Burrow's got to come back and prove that he's the guy that we remember, the guy who's the only quarterback to take down Pat Mahomes other than Tom Brady in the playoffs. But he's got some competition. We know what's happening in Pittsburgh. You got to figure out what the quarterback situation is there. Either way, I think they've gotten better. They also have gotten better in the draft and with offseason acquisitions. And then the Cleveland Browns have one of the best defenses in the game. That's a tough division. So just to say that, all right, Joe Burrow's back, they're going to be the best team in that division, let alone the conference, I think is irresponsible. You still have to go with Baltimore. Lamar Jackson still has to get over that hump, though. His window is closing here pretty quickly if he cannot at least make it to a Super Bowl.
AFC North, best division in football?
Best in the game.
What would be second?
Easily. After that, I'm going to say...
you can't really give it to the AFC West, even though they have the Chiefs. Mm.
Yeah, the West.
NFC West is pretty competitive, but there's some question marks.
I think it's
going to
be the NFC East next year. The Cowboys are going to be good in the regular season.
Yes.
Philly's going to be on point.
Yes.
I think the Commanders will surprise some people.
But what are the Giants going to do with Daniel
Jones? Who knows
what
the football Giants are going to do? You know what? Drew Lock will be the quarterback. You said, week eight? You said yesterday?
I said that I want, because the Giants are going to be, I think, a home matchup for the Seahawks, and that I want one later in the season just in case Drew is starting. Like, Drew by then has won the job.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to see if it happens.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Last week, Dolphins owner Steven Ross reportedly turned down a $10 billion with a B offer for his team, Hard Rock Stadium, and Formula One's Miami Grand Prix. He declined it because he wants to keep those assets in his family. And you know what? I don't blame him.
I don't blame him at all.
Yeah.
You know what? That's what this country is built off of, right? There are
keeping
names.
Keeping money in the family.
Keeping it in the family. There are names in my little town, Monroe.
Yeah.
Families have been there for like 100 years.
That's insane.
It's crazy, right? So, yeah, if you can keep it in the family, keep it in the family. Take care of your kids. I'm with
also,
that.
Those are money-making enterprises, so it's not like he's like losing money. And there's something about already being incredibly wealthy that just lets you make that kind of decision. Mm-hmm. Like, as a normal person, I see that B on $10 billion, and I go, how did you not sell that? You could be set up for life. But in keeping those and already having millions to pass on to your kids and your grandkids, you're already getting the job done.
I want residual income. This is hella residual income. Hella extremely.
425 says, killing me, Bump. NFC East, is Jerry paying you?
No, I wish he was.
I want to know, 425, send me in your like top three toughest divisions in
order. Who's
I
next?
See what this is.
I mean, you can look at the AFC East with Buffalo and the Dolphins.
It's not the AFC
Maybe
East.
Maybe the Jets.
Would they make a case for AFC South? You'd have to really have faith that Anthony Richardson could be solid.
And Trevor Lawrence is going to bounce back.
Right.
I think the division to watch is the NFC North, though. We talked about this, I think, last week with the Bears. Oh, I called Caleb in Washington. Sorry, Jaden Daniels in Washington. Excuse me. But the Bears with Caleb. Detroit, we know, are going to be ballers. Mm-hmm. Jordan Love and Green Bay Packers went to the playoffs. They got Josh Jacobs now, I believe, over there.
Yeah.
Then the Minnesota Vikings, that's one to watch. But I think the NFC East, man.
Also, just to clarify, Bump already said AFC North was the toughest.
Yeah.
I asked him the second toughest, and he settled on NFC East. Speaking of the NFC East, the Cowboys say they're all in on Dak Prescott. Congratulations, Dak. Unfortunately, they aren't giving him a new contract. He becomes a free agent after this season. He's currently on the final year of a four-year, $160 million deal. Now, in the time that he has been the starter, the Cowboys have won four division titles, made the playoffs in five of eight seasons, but they have a 2-5 postseason record.
Mm.
And therein lies the problem.
They're saying, we're all in on Dak for this year. Because if he does not deliver, win that division, win at least one or two playoff games, it's going to be a mess over there. At some point, you have to move on. You look at all the weapons they have there, and you expect some type of success. But as long as Jerry is still in the mix, it's going to be a mess over there. You talk about the quarterback and his responsibilities, and he has to perform. But it starts at the top, too, man. And Jerry's just too involved. I don't know how he doesn't see that.
Yeah.
It's been 30 years since they made it to a Super Bowl. switch it up, Jared, but I don't see him doing it anytime soon.
I don't think enough people remember you saying AFC North was the best. Because we didn't spend a long time defending it. I was like, is it the best division in football? And you said, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Sure. And then I said, well, who's second best?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
AFC North, I said, is the best. We went number two.
But here's why. Because the conversation about the second toughest division is a little more interesting.
It is.
It's very obviously the AFC North as having the best team in football last year, and then a team that's recently been to a Super Bowl with an amazing young quarterback, a team that's just consistently above 500 at the very least. It's a really interesting division and a really good division and a tough division.
I think if the Jets, if Aaron Rodgers can get things
number
going with the Jets, then it could be the AFC East. But right now,
Miami.
Yeah, right now, as it stands, I'm looking at the NFC East as the second best division. AFC North, I repeat, is the best.
Who am I missing in the... So you've got, if the Jets could be good, but I have no faith that they will, but they have talent. Bills, obviously, really solid. Miami, absolutely amazing, and they got that defense.
New England's
right.
Rebuilding.
New England's that's what I'm spacing on.
Yeah, Drake May over there.
Yeah. What a world we live in, where I was spacing on New England as being a real contender.
That's
out
refreshing.
The East.
I'm glad we were having this conversation.
All right, get your questions in for What I Need to Know, brought to you by Cookies Country Chicken. It's coming up next because at 1, normally we'd have it at 1:45, we are switching to The Dugout. Mariners insider Shannon Dreher joins us at 1. We're going to have a long conversation with her about what the heck is going on with this offense, and then obviously all the great things about this team, too. Lots of fun things to talk about. Taking a look around MLB, including a wild nugget about last year's trade deadline dropped by Bob Nightingale. That's coming up at 1:15. We've also got Dave Sims joining us and Mariners pitching strategist Trent Blank. So get your questions in for What I Need to Know before we get to any of that. 866-979-3776. Any question, text it now.
You're listening to Bumpin' Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Get your questions in for What I Need to Know. Any question you have, text it to this number, 866-979-3776. It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by Cookies Country Chicken. What I Need to Know. Now, we were just talking about the toughest division in football, which you said is the AFC North. I asked you about the second toughest, which is a more fun conversation, and you settled on NFC East. Mm-hmm. This listener says, which NFC team scares you the most next season and why?
I'm going to go with either Detroit or Green Bay.
Scares you the most?
Yeah, I think Detroit has that. They have it in them now. They've been there. They've had a year where the offense looked good. You make it to the playoffs, or you almost make the playoffs. Your loss helps the Seahawks get into the playoffs. Then you have a year where you are a quarter away from going to the Super Bowl. I look at the Detroit Lions and I go, yeah, but after the 49ers.
Yeah, I'm going with the 49ers. It's just a team that still has your number, and until you get the better of them, they're going to be my answer there. I feel differently about Philadelphia, although they're still just stacked. Green Bay is scary because they're unpredictable, because Jordan Love just suddenly was able to turn it on and you were like, what is this team? Like, I thought they'd be out of it for a while, but they may have hit on another quarterback.
And they went and got Josh Jacobs.
Yeah. 425, what's the requirement for being the toughest division? Is it standing, how they handle the rest of the league? Is it the division with the most potential teams to make the playoffs? The NFC East has maybe two, but most likely will have only one team in the playoffs.
No, I think they'll have two.
I go by overall record.
And obviously what you did last year, too. I think that matters, even though you're coming in with a different ball club. That's why I look at the AFC North and go, three out of four of those teams made the playoffs. I look at the NFC North and I go, two out of the four teams make the playoffs. One just has a roster now that looks great on paper in the Bears. And then the Minnesota Vikings, I think, made the right move in drafting McCarthy. So me, I look at what they did last year, what I think they're going to do this year. And quarterback obviously plays a huge role in that too.
The Mariners are terrible in hitting. What's the solution? Says the 253.
Concentrate. I don't know what the solution is.
I think a multifaceted problem has many answers.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing I want to see is just, cut down on the chase rate. You want to stop chasing. I think that's a start.
What I Need to Know, powdered or glazed donuts?
Glazed all day.
What psycho What absolutely insane person is choosing powdered over glazed donuts?
That's wild.
Would either of you do? You guys are getting a little silent back there.
Just agreed with you.
Okay, I was going to say. This
I think
is
Matthew might be a powdered donut.
This is, wow. Curtis, this is what I was saying. It was suspiciously quiet over there. Like, normally both of you would be like, yeah, and then Matt wasn't saying anything.
Uh-oh.
And I, my antennas were up.
Matt, promise not to hate me.
Oh, he's
Matt.
He's powdered.
They just taste better.
No, they don't.
I hate how glazed donuts, it's glazed over the entire donut. Like, you have to touch the glaze of the donut. I find that disgusting.
I'm sorry. Is powdered only on the very top of the donut?
No, it isn't. But I find it less disturbing than the entire thing.
I feel like this is more OCD than anything else.
Probably.
Which is weird because powdered donuts to me are the messiest donuts.
Yeah, but you can just shake it right off your hands. You're done.
Yeah,
like a gymnast.
With glaze, you gotta. Yeah, I see where you're going.
Matt.
I see. I'm still. You're wrong, but
yeah,
I see where you're going.
I'm a disgusting person. I completely admit that.
Support you in your decision, but I support you as a human out of love.
I feel seen, and I appreciate
Thank
that.
Thank you. Would you ever be the subject of a roast?
Heck no.
No, it would hurt my feelings.
Nah, I'm good. I get roasted by my kids, my wife, every day. Why would I let hundreds of people just jump in?
Right. Like, notice the only people that agree to being the subject of a roast are those that get paid a ton of money.
Yeah.
Like, also, Tom Brady probably got a very nice check for sitting there.
Well, and even with Tom, I got to admit, I was like, what are they going to make fun of him about outside of his divorce? They really,
quite a bit.
They had some
I told
jokes.
You were a little
I doubted.
Skeptical about
I
it.
I did. You're right. I doubted. I was like, well, what are you going to do? What is there? Like, it's only fun when people have horrible things that you could make fun of them for. But it turns out that divorce is they got a lot of mileage out of that.
But Tom's sitting there like 7-time Super Bowl champion.
I know.
Greatest quarterback of all time. Like, all right.
They had some shots.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that, like, if you subject yourself to being roasted, like, people can do digging on you. The internet exists. Like, stuff you did in high school, probably there's a little paper trail.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone comes out of being on a roast, like, feeling great about themselves. what I need to know. Barbecue weather's arriving. What are the top 2 items you look forward to eating most being cooked on the barbecue? I'm going to limit it to 1 to make it more sportsy. You just have to have an ultimate take.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing like a grilled American burger. Nothing like it.
Yeah. I do like ribs, though, because I love barbecue sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Barbecue sauce.
Barbecue sauce.
What I need to know, when will Julio be more patient at the plate and let the game come to him? I don't know the answers to these questions.
I don't know. With more reps.
Yeah. What I need to know, Bump, what's your golfing goal in 2024?
Oh, man, to shoot in the 70s at a course that I don't belong to.
Yeah. That I don't belong to.
Yeah, that's a thing. You
206.
Remember, of course.
I was at the JT concert on Friday at Climate Pledge. Great show. What's been your favorite concert you've attended?
Oh, man. It was back in the day. I was too young to be there. It was the Up in Smoke tour back in like 2000, something like that. My mom just dropped me off at Arrowhead Arena.
Oh, in Anaheim?
In Anaheim, yeah, and dropped me in the homie's office. I'll be back in like 3 hours. What is that smell?
Why is it all hazy in here?
Why is everybody so slow in here right now?
What I need to know, any chance Quandre returns to Seattle? Is it really possible Jamal could come back as a linebacker? Could both come back to us?
I don't know how the money situation is. I don't think there's enough money to get both of these guys. I think one is possible.
Or if feelings were hurt on their way out.
Right.
Yeah. I'm thinking no.
Neither?
That neither.
So there's not a chance that either of them?
I don't think there's not a chance. I just have a hard time believing it. I guess I see it as like more sports radio fodder than reality, even though you and I have heard rumblings.
Schneider said it himself. He said, hey, man, we'll holler at him, see what's up.
What I need to know, Bump, would you be really willing to race Salk in a 200? Your boy on the morning show needs to be humbled.
Come on, guys. Come on. That's like Come on. Come on, guys. You're for real? You're for real? My son can't even beat me. He's about to be 14.
What I need to know. Why is what I need to know at 12:45 now? It's not at 12:45 now. It's typically at 1:45, but here's the deal. Coming your way next, it is all Mariners, the dugout from 1 to 2 p.m. Mariners insider Shannon Dreher gets things started in just a couple minutes. Don't go anywhere.